You're listening to the More Time, More Profit podcast, the best place for entrepreneurs who are looking to grow past the startup phase of their business, but still need to learn how to free up more time to drive more profit. Now, to present these real strategies, your successful business coaches and hosts, Adam John and Grant Muriel.
Welcome to More Time, More Profit, episode number 31. Today, we're talking about how to maximize profits through outsourcing. My name is Adam John, and as always, I'm joined by Mr. Grant Muriel. What's going on, Grant?
Not much, buddy. I'm actually looking forward to this young gentleman coming onto the podcast today. So for everyone who's listening along, jump onto www.moretimeatmoreprofit.com/031 for episode 31 to download the framework and work through it whilst we're presenting to it.
Beautiful. So today's topic is pretty close to home. I moved to the Philippines about 5 years ago. I built my offshore office in the digital media space, and it was a bit of a struggle initially for me. I really, really had trouble with it. Moving to a new country, dealing with the new laws and the change of culture. After slamming my head against a brick wall for a fairly long time, I finally figured it out, and now outsourcing is a big weapon in my arsenal. What about you, Grant? Tell me about your experience.
Yeah, mate, I can relate to this topic for sure, and I've got a fairly similar story to you where I started outsourcing projects 10 years ago, but only really started hiring full-time employees as outsourced individuals about 6 years ago. And sort of hiring full-time outsourcers delivered to your company is very different than hiring from one-off projects, right? Because you have to consider efficiency, profitability, culture, etc. So we've built some great frameworks that I've delivered my businesses to, and same with you, Adam. But the hardest part that I've found was always getting it started. When the ball starts rolling, it's easy to maintain the momentum, but starting out is always the hardest thing. So I definitely think I can relate to a lot of the topics and ideas coming through this episode.
Absolutely awesome. And without any further ado, let's jump straight into it.
All right. So today we've got Tim Reading, or as Adam and I know him, we call him The Man. So welcome, Tim.
Thanks, guys. Thank you for the introduction.
So, look, Tim's a mate of both of ours, and we give him sort of high esteem for the success that he has had. So, currently he is the CEO of Blue Ocean BPO, and in his past life, he has also owned and ran multiple fitness franchises. His business is known locally as one of the premier employers in the Philippines. Tim is actually a business owner who can relate to every one of his clients and provides immense value with the interactions that he has with them. He is someone that both Adam and I turn to when we have questions regarding employees, especially outsourcing. And over the years, he's perfected and molded his company into a processed and scalable behemoth. So look, it's an absolute pleasure having you on, mate. And to start off this podcast, how did you get into the outsourcing industry? Was it just the best ROI business you saw at the time? Was there a gap in the market? Just take us through that journey.
Good question. I was actually on the client side back in 2007, 2008, 2009. I was in the corporate health game, and we started outsourcing some of our basic lead generation to, we tried India, we tried Fiji, believe it or not, and we tried the Philippines as well. And I think what I found was the biggest gap was in customer experience. Australia has a high, we're just very good at customer experience if we compare ourselves globally. And I noticed that was where some of them were falling over. So I saw an opportunity to replicate the Australian customer experience model and take that to the Philippines. And the rest is history. That was back in late 2009.
Struck lump. That is a while ago. So when you started out, naturally it wasn't perfect, right? So what was your aha moment when you really sort of took humans, which is a huge variable, and sort of mastered it where you could actually productize humans into a business that actually supports a lot of other companies?
That's a pretty broad sweeping question. So I'll answer that in a few different ways. I think the what we stumbled upon early on was that most small businesses or most SMEs actually don't need full-time staff. So there's a mismatch in the market in that most small businesses need somewhere from, say 10 to 80 hours a month. It's probably the sweet spot for your typical role that most small businesses need. But staff want full-time jobs. So there's a disconnect there in terms of the labor market and what the clients need. So we saw a need for part-time staffing, a big need for part-time staffing. So the aha moment for us was when we looked at the staffing model and said, well, how do we build a model where you've got probably three clients per, or three bosses, as they might be called in the Philippines, per person. And then we've been rolling out that model ever since.
I love it. And it's even applicable to businesses with people, but require another 10 hours, 20 hours a week because they have a gap that might not justify a full-time employee as well. So I guess, whilst we run through the podcast, after this session, in your opinion, will every single person listening on be able to prepare themselves to hire outsourced staff and get the same success that you and the clients that you have had?
Oh, look, I think if we do our job, yeah.
I love that one. So awesome, mate. Enough chit-chat. Let's try and get into the meat of the episode.
And if you want to ask Tim or ask any questions, jump into Facebook and search for More Time, More Profit Group and ask away.
We'll be right back after a message from our sponsors on the More Time, More Profit podcast.
Hey, Adam, buddy boy. Look, I've heard you guys consistently mention leveraging outsourced staff, and I'm definitely keen to try it out. And I know More Time, More Profit has over 20 years experience in outsourcing and 8 years experience living in the Philippines. And so you are the guys to ask. So, can you point me in the right direction with regards to filling some full-time positions in my company?
Yeah, you are correct, and I do get this a lot. What real problems are you trying to solve?
Let me tell you. Well, I need to grow my team to cater to the ever-growing client base that we have. I also want cheap staff to drive better profit. And most importantly, I need people who already have a great skill set so that I can get some of my most important time back.
Okay, so outsourcing is cheaper and it allows you to scale very quickly. It covers jobs like web design, administration, development, writing, finance and bookkeeping, marketing, social media and SEO, just to name a few. But have you thought about the potential problems with your staff?
Mate, sounds like everything I need. But you mentioned other potential problems? Like what?
Let's consider your IP walking out the door. What about data security? And what about the reliability of your staff?
Hells no, man. But now that you mention it, what about fast internet, payroll, benefits, employment contracts, etc.?
Don't worry about it, buddy. Have I got a solution for you?
All right, let me have it.
Look, as you're a trusted listener to the show, I'm happy to introduce you into our network. We partner with the fastest growing outsource agency in the Philippines, and their security is better than Fort Knox. They're the only company I trust to look after my network, and they'll give you the same Red Cartman VIP treatment that they give to us.
Nice. But honestly, I'm a bit worried about signing up and just getting dumped with some individual or even someone else's rubbish.
Once again, don't worry about it. There's no problems. You get as many interviews as you want to find the right person to fit the right role for you. You can hire someone from as little as 20 hours a week. And if you inquire today, More Time, More Profit will cover the first week for free. Just go to www.moretimemoreprofit.com/VA to find out more.
No way, the first week free. But honestly, I'm a bit of a nervous Nelly and I'm still concerned is there going to be across the other side of the world.
Look, don't worry about it. For yourself and anyone else in our network, the More Time, More Profit office is located in the same city as our partner. If there are any issues that need escalation, we're more than happy to go in and represent you.
Wowza, you'd actually use your team to help me out if I really need it? You do have faith in their ability. Look, what is that website address again?
Just go to www.moretimemoreprofit.com/VA and get started today.
Thanks, man. I'm going to jump onto it now.
Back to the show. It's the More Time, More Profit podcast.
All right, mate. We're going to jump straight into it. And today we're talking about how to maximize profits through outsourcing. So, Tim, instead of going through the actual framework that you work to, what's the biggest mistake that most business owners make when they go offshore? Is it something relating to pricing? Is it training? Is it setting expectations accordingly? What is the biggest problem that you see?
Well, I think it's an accumulation of things. I've got a list of five of major problems that can result in it either not being optimized or it failing, full stop. And they tend to accumulate to, you know, two or three of them combined. You're probably going to get a bad result. Do one of them in isolation and you might be able to get away with it. The first one is it's when your SME owner wakes up on a Monday morning and has impulsively or reactively just created a role out of thin air. So that's probably the first, that's where it can start poorly. So someone wakes up and says, well, a friend of mine at the pub said, I need a VA, or a friend of mine at the pub said, you need a content writer, or you need a social media VA, or you need a bookkeeper. And they haven't thought it through. They haven't put together a budget for it, and they haven't put together how that person links to the strategy and they go onto a website, fill in a web form or call a number, and then they start hiring literally either that day or that week.
I think that's a great point. I've seen a lot of people do that. You know, maybe you're a branding specialist and you're like, all right, we're going to go offshore and we're going to start a website department. We don't have any developers on shore to be able to guide these guys, but they'll be able to figure it out because that's what we're going to pay them for. And I think that's probably where people start to fall in a bit of a heap there, right?
Yeah, I think there's two broad components there. There's the entrepreneur who's kind of flying solo and they're like, God, I'm over my bookkeeping. And it's a snap decision. And they just go, all right, go onto a website, type in, you know, Filipino bookkeeper or virtual bookkeeper. And then they're up and away and they haven't really thought it through. And then you've got the roles inside a company that might already be done and you're lacking resources for it. And without thinking through the ways that you could optimize existing resources, jump on a website and hire another person to do that role. So an example there would be a marketing agency might have a bottleneck of content and then they'll just quickly go and hire a content person without really thinking it through.
Cool. And that's a good point. Let's jump into the second point.
Lack of processes. So if it starts poorly with that and then it doesn't get better with this, it's going to points 3, 4, 5, maybe a moot point because it might fail there. So if you go offshore and you don't have your flow charts, bullet points, job description, templates, I'd even go as far as to say video training through Snagit and other brands like that.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have that ready, it's going to be an uphill battle because you are sending a process to a different culture. And so in many cases, you're creating the process for the first time. So you're not even sure if the process works. It's not even tested yet.
Absolutely awesome. Step number three.
This is what we call scope creep. It's where if step one and two are done well, then or sometimes done too well, the virtual employee or the outsourced employee, they get asked to do more things. So you might have a bookkeeper who is then asked to do admin, and that might work.
Uh-huh.
But then they're asked to do the social media, which is quite different from bookkeeping. And to take it to an extreme example, you might have someone who's doing web development well, and then they're asked to jump in and do customer support because they're such a great web developer. So scope creep can often result in someone being what I call promoted into an area of incompetence. And then
right.
It's hard to get that back because someone's doing well and there's high fives and there's thank yous and congratulations, and suddenly they stop doing well, the second part, and it's hard to claw that back. So that can be a slippery slope. That's something that we encountered in our business early on. I made that mistake several times. Someone would be a rock star and I'd say, well, can you also manage that team for me? And then suddenly they're doing something they're not very good at. And then the associations with that person can go from positive to negative.
Well, the other side of things is what does it do to the employee's self-esteem? Let's assume that you've been spending 3-4 years studying scripting and web development, and then they're asked to jump into another area, and they probably jump straight in because they don't want to displease anyone, but deep down they're not really doing what they love, and as you say, what they're competent at as well. So I'm sure there's a flow-on effect, you know, not only the productivity, but through to the culture of the companies as well, with the employee hanging his head down a little bit as well.
And I think that's the root cause, really, of the with the business owner, right? Because they're just looking at it as an easy solution to a gap or an inability for them to go and do that task, and they just say, "Okay, well, who cares? Someone else can just do it."
Yeah, it's an easy trap to fall into. It's something that you've really, as a business owner, got to consciously stop yourself doing. I still find myself tempted to do it a lot. And I'd say I'm only still stopping myself 80% of the time. It's still creeping through.
The scope creep. I love the sound of that. Step number four.
Lack of time invested in managing people. I particularly find this in the virtual environment. What you can't see, you don't manage, is an internal mantra we have. We find that happens a lot. If we compare face-to-face management time, which if depending on what textbook you read, it might range from 5 to 25 hours of face time and management time per employee per month. That can drop off significantly in the virtual environment because you're not physically eyeballing someone. And that the result of that is people, you know, quality assurance isn't happening. The daily work in progress meetings aren't happening, and performance evaluations aren't happening. So a lot of the tick ticking of the boxes of what it is to be a manager a lot of that can fall away.
Yeah, I guess when people are out there delivering to what you're asking them to deliver to, sometimes you're just like, oh, okay, that's fine. That person can go away and do it themselves. But, you know, you need to constantly reassure them. You need to constantly manage them, train them, and just make sure you're there for them as well. So I think you can actually take those people for granted.
Yeah. And, it, you know, in that light, it's actually quite similar to point three. The better someone does, the more inclined we are to manage them less. So those points three and four can combine into ramping up a bit of employee dissatisfaction over time.
Couldn't agree more.
Getting some definite goodies here. This is the stuff that, you know, that we talk about. Someone might just say, look, you need a VA. You're going to be able to get one for $8 an hour and it's going to save you this amount of time and you're paying someone $40 an hour. And they run straight out and they get a VA and then they don't go through these steps, and this is where they fall in a big hole. And you get a lot of people out there saying, well, I tried offshoring to the Philippines and it just didn't work. It didn't work for me and my business. So jumping into step number five, what's the final point?
Going too cheap with the role. And that can happen whether you're insourcing, outsourcing, hiring internally, et cetera. So not understanding where in the org chart the role sits. We often find this with our smaller businesses. And, for example, I'll hire a social media consultant where they really need a social media director and then a social media consultant possibly reporting into that director. So often the smaller the business, if you're a solopreneur, for example, your tendency is to hire frontline staff rather than people that can actually roll out a strategy or at least create the strategy and then roll it out. So there's a bit of a skills mismatch that can often play out with people not really knowing how to devise the original role, for example, in social media, where the social media consultant, they're waiting for their boss to tell them what to do rather than actually devising a strategy, which sits at the top of the org chart, and then rolling it out, which sits at the bottom of the org chart or the frontline execution part.
Awesome. And just for the people playing at home, can outsourcing work for every business out there? Are there certain businesses that are, you know, they should just turn off now and not listen because it's not effective for them? Or, you know, how does outsourcing fit into every business, you know, not only around Australia but also internationally, because I know you service there as well?
I think it depends on the role and depends on where the company is in their life cycle. And if you're talking specifically staff sitting at a desk, then if the role exists in the country of origin, the role can be done offshore. I'll exclude manufacturing and other things from this conversation. But if we're just talking skilled labor, white collar sitting at a desk, almost anything can be outsourced. What works better is what's sitting at the bottom third quadrant of the org chart, the more tactical execution with the onshore people rolling out the strategic piece.
Right. So a simple example here would be if you had a lawn mowing business, obviously you couldn't get them to come mow your lawns for you, but they could do the bookkeeping or the marketing or the social media or something along those lines.
Yeah. Well, hey, if the mower was run by remote control on an app, then they could possibly do it.
Give it 2 years. I think that's the future. Maybe even some VR goggles as well.
Yep.
That's fantastic. Look, the last point that you mentioned, I do hold true and strong. So one of my previous business partners was very adamant on paying not what people believe the role is worth. So outsource, everyone decreases the value that it provides, but actually paying the value of the role, right? So they actually align the amount they're willing to give across based on the value of the role in the country, right? So going to your point of getting a creative director, for someone to run an entire social media part of the business, you should really be taking a step back and thinking, well, what value are they bringing back into our business? But also, what's the market rate for that position? Obviously, you can't get a frontline person, as you were talking about, Tim, to go and deliver to a director's level strategy. And they just really need to align to that exactly.
Yeah, and I think the key is understanding the distinction between the two or wherever it sits in the org chart. And that's a skill, and it's something that you build up over years, and there is no formula for that. But I think if I was to give like a paragraph of my two cents on how to address that, it would be, do you know how to actually do that skill yourself? If the answer is no, then you need someone in strategy to create the direction or the thrust for that part of the business, even if that's a freelance ex-CEO or ex-someone, director level. And then they can help you build it, and then you can offshore it. But without that initial step, if you're not a subject matter expert, you're going to struggle.
I wonder how many staff and how many thousands of dollars we've burned through between the three of us trying to figure that one out over the years.
Yeah, I'll admit to a lot.
Million.
I'm very guilty myself. So what I want to do now, mate, is I want to go into an example for the people listening at home. We can't really use more time, more profit, because I think this would be a little bit unfair because we have the unfair advantage. So we're always getting contacted by companies out there, people wanting designers, marketers, data entry people, accounting, customer support agents. What's the first step out there for people listening, how they can get started if they're a little bit apprehensive and some of the pitfalls they should avoid?
The first step in getting started.
Do we run an ad? Do we decide if we want a home-based or do we want office space? Do we go with someone such as yourself? Do we hire a company to do it? What are the considerations to be made before just jumping straight into the deep end?
Yeah, I think there's a few. A lot of it's going to depend upon the size of what's being outsourced, size being people, and then the financial elements of whether that should be done via what's called a captive, which is where you literally jump on a plane and you go and set up an office. I wouldn't recommend that unless you're looking at least 15 to 20 people. So if you're looking at just one role, given the cultural differences, simply placing an ad, knowing how to do that, I'd certainly recommend going to a provider, an offshore outsourcing firm or a staffing agency, whatever you want to call them, and giving it a go at probably the part-time level to begin with. So pick a role that is going to be part-time that you don't need full-time. Probably invest as little as possible from an overall perspective, not necessarily from an hourly rate, but you might start with 10 to 20 hours a week of someone's time, ideally in an office. Home-based roles offshore can be a little bit more volatile. They don't stick as much. Independent contractors might go looking for other jobs the moment they get one with you, and you're never really going to know what they're doing. So I'd certainly recommend office-based in a tier one city such as Manila, Cebu, cities like that, where there's good internet, good electricity, backup power, etc., and part-time, and with a role that's going to stick, a role that you need long-term, and a role that you feel like you can effectively manage.
Beautiful. Maybe something a little bit closer to home. So let's assume I call you up, Tim, and I say, look, you've got a company that does virtual assistants. I need two web designers, an SEO expert, and a copywriter. What process would they actually go through from there?
All right. That's a fair few people. So we'd form job descriptions. So we've got a job description template that we'd simply go live with via a screen share session, and then literally both simultaneously type into the screen. So I would type in with the person looking for the four staff. We'd type into the document at the same time, and then we'd fully form a job description. We also have templates. So if someone's not sure what an SEO person does, we'll have the 15 things that an SEO person does up and down the org chart. And they would literally just highlight the ones that they want. They'd sign off on the job description, and then we'd have a look internally. We have a system whereby we always hold excess people on the basis that we're going to get people that want clients that want people quickly. But for that sort of thing, that's unusual in that there'd be less likelihood that someone would have that many people just sitting around. So then an ad would go in the equivalent of Seek.com, which is in the Philippines. It might be MyNemo or JobStreet. And from there, we'd roll into our standard recruitment process, which is reasonably similar to what a recruitment process would be going to a recruitment firm in Sydney or an internal recruitment process. So ad goes live, people click the links, fill in the forms, and then just like web forms entering a lead funnel, the candidates flow in. We would then screen out the people we don't want and write them a nice email saying thank you. And then the people who were qualified would get a phone call. So the phone screening happens. That's just a quick assessment of can they articulate well on the phone, if they can, because they'll need to if they're talking to US or Australian or UK customers. Then they would go through to testing in our office. So EQ, IQ, typing speed, general communication, that sort of thing. If they pass that, In our company, they'll get an employee value algorithm score based on all of that data, which puts them in a tier. We've got 15 tiers in our company. So tier one would be junior, tier 15 would be incredibly senior and much more higher paid. And from there, the final step would be a panel interview. And this is all before they would be put forward for a client interview. So all of the screening happens prior to a customer seeing them. We see how they interact in a group. We see how they respond to outside-of-the-box questions, see who the natural leaders are, et cetera. And then from there, hypothetical job offers are put forward and we ascertain their interest, and then a job offer is put forward. Our people then go into training. So anyone that interviews people that work for us, they're already in training. So they're not candidates off the street. They'd already be physically housed in our office. So our process has kind of been built off about 6 years of seeing how standard recruitment may not be what's required. A little bit more teasing out who's not suitable is required in this sort of model.
And this is exactly why we brought Timmy on the call, because it's one of those sort of pulling back the curtains, if you will say, as to how to appropriately sort of filter for outsourced staff, albeit that the hiring process is a little bit different to the Western society or even an Eastern European company, etc. So it's, the question that I've got for you, Tim, is what is the base minimum if I'm going out looking for a outsourced provider or a VA provider? What is the base minimum questions that I have to ask them, or the least requirements that I need for them, so they have internal security, they at least screen 20 people before I see one? Or what would you say is the minimum requirement that every single person has to take away and implement?
That's a really good question. Haven't thought about that until you asked it. I'd probably say, this is a bit left field, but I'd probably ask a provider, what will happen after I start? I think that's what separates the good from the bad, in that it's not difficult to find someone, particularly in the developing world. It's not difficult to find a candidate. It's not difficult to find a candidate willing to take a job, and willing to take a job for X salary, which could be low at short notice. So there's not a lack of candidates, but it's what happens after they start that I think will determine whether it works for a client or not. So where will they sit? Will they be in an office? Will they be at home? What management structure will be above them, if any? And what sort of employee incentive programs are in place to make sure they stay? Because if someone walks out the door, your IP walks out the door. And your IP walks out the door, you've got to start again. Often you've got to take back the role yourself.
That leads me into my next question, which I was going to talk about security and data and IP and things like that. You know, we're sitting here in the business park, in the IT park in Cebu, and there's massive companies. We've got Convergys, who handle Disney and Xbox, and we've got Telstra, who's our national provider there in Australia. So we've got massive companies, JP Morgan down the road. When people go cheap and they go home-based people, maybe they go, you know, through a SaaS online and they just find someone to work for them 5-10 hours, you're not really guaranteeing security of your data. So can you talk a little bit about the security, maybe a horror story you've seen or something along those lines?
Well, I've heard some horror stories of some of the banks who there's been credit card fraud. And that's, you know, that's probably even been on the news in Australia. But in general, it depends on the type of process that's being done. Some of them really don't require security, and it'd be naive to think they did, but some of them require masses of security, and you know, your Telstras and your Citibanks and the likes. In general, most BPO firms or outsourcing firms will have basic things like CCTV, which can be viewed by the senior executive team, sometimes by the clients as well. They'll have USBs or USB, what's the word? They'll be
disabled,
unusable. Yeah, disabled. So they can't do anything with that. They can't take data out. They'll also, because a lot of smartphones have cameras, cameras are not allowed on most operations floors as well, so no one can take a photo of a screen. Taking that to the next level, some larger BPO firms have what's called dumb computers, in that there is nothing on the computer other than what you log into. There's no software, there's nothing there. So you type in a password, and then you're just, if it's an inbound call queue, you literally only see what management allows to be on that computer. And then at the end of the day, it wipes it clean. So credit card details, et cetera, would be wiped. So that's the extreme of the security.
Yeah, the reason I ask is because many years ago, many moons ago, when I first got into outsourcing, I sent a job to India to a developer. And I've mentioned this on the show before, and we sent him passwords for our clients. And as it turned out, his computer got hacked. And he had the FTP details of our clients and got hacked, ripped the site apart, and cost us a lot of money to get fixed. So by me going for that cheaper option, I probably wouldn't go down that track again. I just found him on freelance. I said, can you do this job? And I just assumed that he would, you know, dispose of the passwords properly. So there's a lot of other things talking about when you go from outsourcing all the way from, you know, home-based all the way through to the top BPOs. So I know that's a big concern for a lot of our listeners out there.
It is. And a software tip for people, there's a really good platform called Spectre 360, which can be installed on anyone's computer, which has phenomenal security processes. If someone types in a phone number or types in a URL that they don't want them to go to, et cetera, it can start screen recording and screenshotting and sending information to IT departments and all that sort of thing. So we use that a lot in our company.
Love that. Look, we're coming to the end of it here. I was just wondering if Grant, there's a beautiful 5-point framework in there. I was wondering if you can take us through it, mate.
Well, I've been busy writing down absolutely everything and trying to suck out all of this awesome knowledge from Timmy. So, look, there's 5 parts of this framework, nice and easy, but it's kind of a couple of them are things that people look over because all of the entrepreneur helpers and things like that sit there and just say, well, just outsource and just delegate. But most people get into it and fail the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times. So working through all of these 5 points will help everybody listening be able to jump into the outsourcing pool and sort of dip their toe in without ultimately failing, right? So the first point is having a defined role. So you need to understand the budget that you've got. You need to link the role to a strategy that your business is delivering to and understand exactly what that individual is going to be doing and the value they bring to the business. The second part is you have to have processes set in place. So they each individual or each VA or each outsourcer needs to understand where they sit within the business and how they can succeed at their role as well as the tasks that they need to do to the quality the business requires them to be at. The third part is to ensure that there is no scope creep. So a saying that I love repeating is jack of all trades, master of none. So always ensuring that the person that you're hiring is an expert or at least knowledgeable at what they're delivering and making sure that you don't try and put too much on top of them. Asking some ad hoc requests is okay, but bringing them into a part that they don't want to be an expert in or even involved in is obviously going to cause it to fail. Point 4 is making sure that you touch base and manage them. So even though you can't see them, they are still a valuable person within your team. So as you said, Tim, what can't be seen won't be managed. So always make sure that you interact with them. An approach that we have at More Time, More Profit is a day-to-day toolbox or a day-to-day interaction with a bit of a weekly meeting based on the different levels that we have. So always make sure that you interact and manage them just as if they were in your team. And the fifth point is never discount the role. So you always need to align the role that you're hiring for with the strategy the business is looking to deliver to, meaning that you don't put a frontline employee or a frontline VA or outsourcer in a director's or a strategic position because you're ultimately going to make them fail because they're learning at the same time they're meant to be delivering.
How did that framework sound there, Tim? Did you hit the nail on the head?
I think you did. Perfect.
He seems to be listening today. I love that. And to download all the amazing examples, brilliant frameworks and wrap-up points from today's episode, go to www.moretimemoreprofit.com/031 for episode 31.
That's right. Look, don't forget to download all of the points that we've worked through today. Print off the worksheet and make sure that you implement it before you go and hire an outsourcer yourself.
Look, everyone, Tim has been generous enough to offer More Time, More Profit listeners a chance to work with a trusted virtual assistant for free within a week, so it's risk-free to you. If you want to avail this offer, go to www.moretimemoreprofit.com/VA. We'll be continuing this conversation over at Facebook. You can go to Facebook and search for More Time, More Profit group and join in the conversation there.
Thanks, everyone. Don't forget to jump onto iTunes, click the subscribe button, and leave us a review of exactly what you've learned and what you've taken out of today's episode.
Awesome. And that's it from us. We'll catch you the same bat time, same bat channel next week. It's bye for now.
Catch you later, Tim. See you, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
You've just been listening to More Time, More Profit podcast. For more info, check out moretimemoreprofit.com. Make sure to tune in at the same time next week for another dose of real-life business strategies.